You're listening to the Crosscheck NHL Show, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Here are your hosts, Andrew Berkshire and Mary Clark.
Welcome to the Crosscheck NHL Show. Mary is away this week, so I'm joined by a special guest host, the same one as the last time Mary was gone away, and it's going to make Mary upset because this is now the third time that Laura Saba has been on this podcast and that Mary hasn't been able to be here at the same time. And Mary has mentioned to me several times now that she feels like it's a curse that Laura's only on when she's not. That is how it's going. But
it's personal.
It is personal, very clearly. But before we get into the show today, we have a good show. We're going to talk to you about our show sponsor, which is Rock Auto. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, everything that your car will ever need. You can find at rockauto.com. I'm Andrew Berkshire, analyst for the Montreal Gazette, and also the host of the new Canadiens postgame show, Game Over Montreal, hosted on the Steve Dangle Podcast Network YouTube page, youtube.com/STPN. And Laura is the host of Locked On Canadiens, and we're going to have to talk about the Canadiens today. That's going to be our first segment. But before we get into the Canadiens, we're going to just tell you what we're going to have going on here today. We're going to also talk about some other teams that are starting slower than expected. The Blackhawks, specifically, after their big quasi rebuild over the summer, how that's looking. And then some teams that are off to early, hot streaks. And you can't read too much into a young season, but we're going to do that anyway because it's fun, and then we'll hit it up at the end of it with our pop culture roulette segment, which I actually didn't tell Laura about, but whatever you're watching or enjoying right now outside of hockey, you'll bring that up on the podcast so that other people have a chance to enjoy what you're enjoying. So Laura, first of all, how was your weekend?
It was good, except for the Canadiens now have laid an egg in three games.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody's feeling that outside of that room more than I am right now, trying to launch a brand new Canadiens postgame show. And I'm seeing the numbers fall after they've scored just three goals in three games.
Oh yeah. It's the same for our podcast too. And actually when we launched it, the year that we launched Locked On Canadiens, we've been around for, this is our third season. And that was the year that they went on 2 8 game losing streaks, and then pandemic happened. So it was a little bit hard, and it is true that listeners like, when they're winning, when there's fun stuff to discuss, when you can be smug about teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs and things like that, it's definitely harder. But I have noticed that our community is very devoted. There are people that hang around no matter what, and we're very lucky. And the thing is, I don't expect this to continue very much. There are some things that the Canadiens need to figure out, and they're fundamentals. They're very important. But I think that it is possible and within their grasp to be a bubble team and at least keep it exciting all season long. I don't think that it's time to give up and go for a tank just yet or try to get the first overall pick, even though it is a deep draft. I do think that there's still time and there are still major adjustments that are within their reach. This isn't a situation where we talk so much about how they don't have top end talent. And that's one of the reasons that they haven't really progressed that far in the last few years. This isn't something that they have to give up assets for or whatever. They have to change some things about the way that they play. And again, I'm not expecting them to turn around and become a three-peat Stanley Cup champion by making these changes, but I do think that they will be able to score more goals and win more games. And I guess we should talk about those adjustments, right?
Yeah, I was going to bring up your latest podcast on Locked On Canadiens. The title was "A Fundamental Change That the Habs Need to Make." So I don't want to spoil too much of what you talked about. Like, we don't have to go into as much detail as you guys obviously do on Locked On Canadiens. But let's tease and dig into a little bit what you and Scott talked about on that podcast.
So the fundamental theme of that is that what the Canadiens do is that they play it safe and they try not to get scored on. And in all aspects of their game, I see very little aggression, except on the part of, let's say, Ben Chiarot going after somebody when he really shouldn't.
Time.
The worst times. And when I say aggression, I mean forechecking. I mean being creative on the power play. There's so many different little things about their play that could be solved by changing the philosophy from trying not to get scored on to trying to score and trying to control the game. There is more risk that way, but it's a high risk, high reward situation. I understand why they don't want to take risks. They're without their top goaltender. They're without a player that has been the anchor of their defense for the longest time. I understand all of those things, but at the same time, you saw in the preseason, their power play was great. As soon as it got into regular season action, they started defaulting to the safe play again, which we know year in and year out has not worked out. So on the podcast, we mentioned that the power play is a microcosm of the way that they see things. So if they make that one shift, I think it's possible to get their offense going. Because if you look at their top nine, it's a decent top nine, especially when Mike Hoffman comes back. It's not like this team is an abject horror of a lineup, right? Like, they do have holes, yes, for sure. Their center depth is not as much as we would like. Their defense is not as mobile, puck moving, and dynamic as we would like, for sure. However, they do have pieces to at least be a less boring team, first of all, a less safe team, a more offensively dynamic team, and to at least make it interesting. You know, the Ottawa Senators last year weren't that great, but they were fun. Like, their fans had fun watching them do a run and gun offense, non-existent defense. That was great. You know, I don't want the same results from the Habs. I don't want them to be at the bottom of the league. However, I do want a little bit more effort on that front. It's a philosophical shift. I don't think they're not trying. I think they're trying the wrong things and they're scared. I don't want them to play scared. I want them to be aggressive. And if you compare the way that they're playing now to the way that they played in the postseason against teams that were better than them, or quote unquote better than them, I don't know about the Winnipeg Jets right now. I think they're still a question mark. Some people think that they're amazing. Some people think that they're going to flounder. However, like, if you look at the way that they played all of those teams, and when they were able to sort of go toe-to-toe with Toronto in those last three games, it was because they were taking the risk. They were being aggressive. They were trying to take control of the game. They weren't hanging back. They weren't playing a defensive style. They were doing what they could, and that allowed players like Cole Caulfield to shine. That allowed the Canadiens to take control of games against teams like Vegas, for example.
Yeah, 100%. And I think when you see what Jake Allen's been doing so far this young season, you can afford to take some risks. You don't have to play the most conservative game in the world. And, like, yes, you do have to be worried in the back of your mind a little bit that Jake Allen might break down if Carey Price can't come back at some point during the season. But right now, when you need to be piling up wins and you're already 0-3, you got to take some risks. And this is something that I think a lot of Canadiens fans and analysts have been saying for a long time about this team. And it seems like they just don't want to go there. And I think one of the problems is that they have too many of the same player. And in replacing Shea Weber this season, I know it's very difficult. And, you know, you can't really do that in an off season. There's no trade market really that you're going to find assets to magically come up with the top pairing defenseman. Dougie Hamilton was out there in UFA, but if you miss on him, obviously you're not going to get anything in UFA that can approach Weber. But at the same time, they knew Weber's medical history, right? They could have been preparing this for this eventuality the last 3-4 years, and they didn't. They got caught with their pants down. And David Savard, I think, is getting a lot of unfair criticism at the moment. I think he's looked all right, but he can't replace Weber. And now the extra amount of pressure on Jeff Petrie is just enormous. Already the pressure on Petrie was enormous last season. So now it's just like, okay, do everything for us, Jeff. Create all of our offense, Jeff. You know, and you see it on the power play, right? It's like nobody's doing anything. They keep on deferring to him and he wants to make a pass. And then eventually he gets annoyed and he takes a big shot.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing. They're defaulting to that when they've got guys who can move like Nick Suzuki. They've got guys that can stick handle like Jonathan Drouin. They've got players who've played on the power play before, like Christian Dvorak. He's, you know, one of the reasons they brought him in was his ability. You've got guys, you even got Yoel Armia once in a while will come up with something. Obviously, we don't expect him to be there when Mike Hoffman comes back. I think it'll look very different. However, you've got guys who can move. They're quick. Some of them have great shots, like Cole Caulfield. You should play Cole Caulfield a little bit more. I know he's on the second right now, or sometimes he's on the second wave. I can't even tell anymore at this point, because every time I see them, it's like they're shooting back to the point and whoever's on the point is trying to figure it out. And you can see, you know, Nick Suzuki scurrying around the ice. He's trying to do that dynamic thing. But then the decision that he makes is always to pass to the point. And that's something that, you know, you're talking about Jeff Petrie and the pressure on him. He's also not young, right? He's 34 years old now. This is like in a defenseman's years. That's he might as well be 51, right?
Yeah, pretty much. All right. So the Montreal Canadiens, aside from the fact they are not scoring, their underlying numbers are not great. Like the signs aren't very good so far. The power play looks terrible. The penalty kill is not great either. And their former strength being even strength has not materialized at the moment. I think people underestimated how much turnover this team is dealing with this year. Between, you know, Weber, Price not being there at the moment, there's very little carryover in the top end of the leadership group, right? Petrie's still there. Gallagher's still there, but also Paul Byron's not there, right? He's part of the leadership group. He's out on the sidelines after pretty major surgery. Philippe Deneau is gone, so their shutdown center is gone. Christian Dvorak is kind of taking over that role, but he's just new, right? He's got time and he has to figure things out. Jesperi Kotkaniemi's gone. On the bottom end, they lost Corey Perry, who was a big part of their team last year. Like, this is a much different team than last season. And I think anybody who was expecting them to roll into this year and just blow the doors off of teams was not thinking clearly.
But, right. Well, I think people did expect them, though, to be a bubble team. And right now they're not showing us even that.
No, they're showing us nothing.
Exactly. And it's very telling what you said. And the last thing we'll say before I know we want to move on is they are playing. Somebody pointed out it's like they're playing like a group of guys that just showed up, picked up sticks on that day and just got into a game.
Yeah,
and
no that, identity.
Exactly. The identity. Yeah. You talked about it on your last episode of Game Over Montreal. Like, there's a lot of conversation about the identity of this team. And I think for me, there seems to be no chemistry. I think they needed to work on that in the preseason rather than audition young players, which is great. But knowing that they were in this situation, I think what they should have done is focused a lot more on building chemistry between these guys. And Dvorak, for example, right now, if you look at his chemistry with his line mates, that's great. But if you look at his role on the team, like you said, he's trying, or they think that he's going to replace Deneau. That's not going to work out. You need to tailor the team to what these guys can do. And that's what's missing.
Absolutely. So from the Canadians, we can also look at another team that is expected, I think, to be a lot better than the Montreal Canadiens, who've started off extremely slow, and that's the New York Islanders. They're also 0-2. And while the Canadiens have lost a couple of close games against the Rangers and the Maple Leafs after, and also the one blowout against Buffalo, the Islanders have allowed 11 goals in two games. They also have, like, again, we're reading into two games, so we're not making any conclusions here. We're just looking at early returns. But of all 32 teams so far, the Islanders have the third worst expected goals against per 60 minutes at even strength, which is a huge departure for them. So it's not just that the goalies have been bad. The defense has not been there for Barry Trotz's team. How quickly do you think this is going to change up?
I think it's going to be very quick, to be honest. I think the Islanders, very rightfully, people have predicted that they're going to be at the top of their division this year. Some people are saying they're going to run away with it. I'm not ready to call that yet. But I think that one of the things that you have to think about is they are also, like, you can kind of count them in that cup final hangover because they did go seven games against Tampa Bay. Like, they are a team that played longer into the postseason than a lot of the others did. They are a team that had a very short turnaround time. And you know the way that Lou Lamoriello works, right? Like, he makes all these decisions and then you don't even find out about them until 2 months later or whatever it is. I think that it's a team that can figure it out. They've got one of the best coaches in the league, if not the best coach, depending where you look at it or how you look at it. And they've got a lineup that, you know, consistently has been quote unquote surprising. Whereas if you look at it, they play a style that you would not expect them to be, you know, bottom three in the league. You said the third from the worst in expected goals, right? Like, that's not something that you expect from the system that they play. It's not something that you expect from their players. I think that their issue right now is probably just sort of trying to get back into the swing of things after a monumental disappointment. You know, like, they went so far 2 years in a row, they couldn't pull it out against Tampa and they got beat up a lot, right? Like, they played a really, really long time and a really tough style. So I hate blaming tiredness, but it was a short offseason. This is the shortest offseason that they've had ever, I think, since I can't even remember, right? Like, it ended in July and then they're back on the ice in September.
Yeah, it was quick. And we should say also that their first two games were against two legitimately excellent teams in Carolina and Florida, right? So, like, those two teams came in rocking and that hurt. You know, like, sometimes when you face two great teams off the hop and your identity is like defensiveness, right? And usually the first month of the season is the least defensive hockey of the season. Everything's a little bit messy coming out of training camp. There's new people to integrate. And then November comes, things are starting to tighten up a little bit. But those high-end offensive teams, I find, usually have the advantage in October. And the next game that the Islanders play, which is going to be on Tuesday night, I think is a huge chance for them to fix things and get things going the right way. And that's actually going to be the topic, one of the teams that we're going to talk about in our next segment, the Chicago Blackhawks. But first, we got to tell you about BetOnline. We're back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head over to our new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. You just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. I actually did check it out, Laura. Their new website design is like pretty slick. Like I mentioned on the last podcast.
I heard
podcast
you telling well. Mary on the last podcast, and then I went and checked it out. It looks really nice.
It's so much nicer and so much more easy to navigate. So definitely go check it out. From basketball, football, baseball, postseason, and boxing, and the NHL and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all of your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. So the Chicago Blackhawks this year, coming into the season, there were several people, I'm assuming, in that organization and some folks in media who believe that Chicago Blackhawks are back, baby. They're back to the cup-contending Blackhawks because they traded for Seth Jones and his brother Caleb out of Edmonton. I actually like the Caleb Jones move overall because they got rid of Duncan Keith. But it ain't working so well so far. It's
you know who I feel really bad for?
Who?
Marc-Andre Fleury.
Oh, no kidding, hey?
Honestly, and I know like we've made jokes in Montreal. Montreal has had playoff success against him. It's been not the greatest games of his career, but he's a legitimately good person. He's a nice guy who was given like the short end of the stick by Vegas when he got traded, and he had the option to retire, but he didn't because, again, he's a good person with integrity. And now what's happening is that his phenomenal Vezina winning season from last year is just almost forgotten at this point. You know, he's one of the three goalies that Canada's expected to take to the Olympics. And if you look at his stats right now, they look abysmal. And it's not his fault. It's the team that's abysmal. And I got to ask, you know, the Blackhawks fans have been calling for coach firing since he got hired, basically, since 2 weeks after he started. I don't understand why it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, that it's a very confusing situation there in Chicago because it's clear that the organization feels like they can run it back and try to like eke out another Stanley Cup. And yet they're seeming to judge their coaching staff based on them being rebuilding. Like there's very little accountability there. It seems like they're putting everything on the players. And like, I'm sure that there was a lot of free passes given last year because they missed Jonathan Toews the whole year. Right.
Right.
And this year with like Toews back, Kirby Dach is healthy. The expectation is to take another step. Well, three games into the season, Laura, do you know what percentage of the goals at 5-on-5 the Chicago Blackhawks have?
Zero.
Not quite that bad, but it is the worst mark in the league. 15%.
Oh, wow.
15%. The Islanders are the next worst at 25%. And then a shocker is another team that I want to talk about, but I'm going to hold it until we're done with the Blackhawks here. The third worst team at even strength so far, because it's a serious shocker. Their expected goals for percentage is 33%, only better than the Anaheim Ducks, the Chicago Blackhawks.
And the Anaheim Ducks are in an open rebuild.
Yes. And the Anaheim Ducks, everybody expected to be a bottom three team in the league this year. It's like them, Buffalo, and Arizona. Those were like right. the with a bullet, those are the bottom three. And we're going to talk about Buffalo as well later, because like, what the heck's going on there too? The early season is the best because it's just so chaotic, right? But yeah, so Chicago is not going over well. And I saw some people ragging on Seth Jones as well. I'm going to check out. I haven't had a chance this morning because I had my youngest had his 18-month doctor's appointment this morning before they went to daycare. So that took out my morning and I didn't have too much time to prep for this podcast. So I didn't have a time to research. I just like got the topics ready. But Seth Jones has been getting bagged on a lot from the analytics people because, you know, he's been labeled as a top guy by USA Hockey. A lot of hockey writers think he's amazing and they paid a huge price for him in the offseason. And over the last couple of years, he's really, really trailed off. So what is Seth Jones up to this year? We're going to find out right now. He is currently bottom two on the Blackhawks in terms of shot attempt percentage at 39%. He has a 0% on ice goals for percentage and 35% expected goals for percentage.
Those are not good numbers.
No, they're not good. Only 31% on high danger scoring chances.
Wow.
It's bad.
Do you know what's really interesting is when they traded for him, before they signed him, you know, people were talking about how it's not a good idea to pin your future and your hopes on this guy. And then the Blackhawks came out and signed him to what, $9.5 million a year?
Yeah,
it was a giant extension. Lot of money. I wish I could remember who said it. It might have been Ian Mendez or something, where they said it was Dougie Hamilton money for a player that is not Dougie Hamilton. And for whatever reason, the perception about Dougie Hamilton is that he's not good by executives and people like the hockey people. It's that he's not good, whereas analytics people love him. A lot of fans love him. And then you look at Seth Jones, and hockey people think he's one of the greatest. I think it has to do with his draft positioning. You know, his first year in the league, he played with Shea Weber, right? There's a lot of stuff that goes around it, where like you he's seen as a player that is better than he truly is. And unfortunately for him, that comes with a lot of pressure. That contract comes with a lot of pressure. The splash they make with that trade comes with a lot of pressure. And the fact that the Blackhawks are openly talking about being back, or their writers or whatever, like the buzz is that they're going to be back, that puts a lot of pressure on a guy who in Columbus, the cracks started to show already. And he went from being one of the best defensemen, or one of the most promising defensemen, I should say one of the most promising, to a guy that's just a guy. I don't think he's abjectly bad, but I think that he's definitely not somebody that you center your defense around. That's not somebody you build around. When you give somebody a contract like that, you're saying this guy is one of our core pieces, our key pieces. That's a lot of pressure for a guy whose performance did not match up to that. And if you think about the way Tortorella's teams play, and the fact that he played against under Tortorella and didn't put up that great numbers analytically, I feel like a Tortorella type system is tailor-made for a guy like Seth Jones to succeed. And he didn't. It's the opposite of what we talked about with Sammy Niku in Montreal, where people were talking about how he was not that great under Paul Maurice. But that's a system that's designed for players like Sammy Niku to fail. It's the other way around. With Tortorella, it's a system that's designed for players like Seth Jones to succeed. So now, like, when you look at that, like, I feel like that should have been a big red flag from the beginning. You want to trade for him? That's great. You want to add him to your team? That's great. You can't center your team around him.
No. And I mean, you talk about Dougie Hamilton. Look at the impact that Hamilton has already had in New Jersey. Like, he's been incredible to start the year. And I think
it's tiny
sample sizes, right? So it's not like the whole year is not decided, obviously.
Right.
But I think you look at the early returns here and you're like, who's right between the old school hockey people and the analytics people? And it almost always works out this way, that the analytics people are usually ahead of the curve. And then eventually the old school hockey people catch up. And like, to be fair, analytics people were ahead of the curve on Seth Jones both ways. They thought that he was really good when Nashville gave up on him. They thought that he was going to be better than Ryan Johansson. And I remember at the time of that trade, it was like, you know, Seth Jones has potential, but Ryan Johansson is a number one center. And analytics people were very strong, like, no, Seth Jones is the better player. And then once Seth Jones started to fall off, that's around when old school hockey people caught up and were like, Seth Jones is the next great defenseman. And everyone was like, actually, it's kind of falling apart. And like, this story plays out every year, like multiple times a year with multiple players. So it's not surprising, but it is always a little bit funny. Now, the other team that I wanted to talk about that's off to a bit of a weird, messy start is a team that's actually doing fine in terms of wins and losses. They're 2-1. The Stanley Cup champion, Tampa Bay Lightning. They just lost Nikita Kucherov, which is unlike last season. They've lost a full line. I don't think they can account for that as well as they did last year. And there's already people joking, don't worry, he'll be back day one in the playoffs, but we'll ignore that. But
we've seen this film before.
We have seen this film before, but I think this is a different Lightning team, and the Lightning are actually the team that is third worst so far in even strength goals for. They're at just 27%.
Is that because they allowed 6 goals to the Detroit Red Wings?
It could be. I mean,
that was an incredible game.
It was an incredible game and an incredible comeback for the Lightning, right? Like you look at it in the first two periods of that game, you're like, okay, what's going on with the Lightning? And then they come back, you're like, no, they're fine. They're fine. They just had an off game and they're like, oh, right, we're super powerful. We're like a superhero and we could just charge up and beat the crap out of this crappy Detroit team. So it was like, they're fine. But like overall, their even strength play has not been great. They're only about, let's see, Yeah, they're barely above half in shot attempts. Their expected goals for is just at half. So they've been unlucky to start. But without Nikita Kucherov, I think they might be in a little bit of trouble. Not missing the playoffs trouble, but I don't know if they're a top-end contender right now.
If they're as much of a juggernaut. Well, they did lose Yanni Gourde. They lost Nikita Kucherov temporarily. They lost guys off of their roster that, you know, we talked for 2 years about how the third line on this team could be the first line on any other team. But now you don't have that.
Yeah.
You're missing that. Yeah. You still got a great and promising top six, for example, or people that you can put on your top six. It's also something where I feel like with Tampa, it's possible that they'll just like, they'll flip a switch 2 weeks from now, and then they'll just run away with the, you know, for the rest of the year and be one of those teams that's terrifying night in and night out. But I do think that there's a lot to be said. We talked about it in the reverse, right? With teams that have a lot of like an injection of new players and how they're struggling and they're trying to find chemistry and stuff like that. I think in this case, with the like exodus of some players, they have to find a new chemistry. Like the system might still be good. The team might still be good, but the way the pieces fit in it are different now, and people have to have different roles. And sometimes if they're not 100% like keyed into what's expected of them and what their specific roles are relative to their line mates, their opponents, the team as a whole, I think that that might be a little bit of what's going on. But if you, like you said, I'll tell you who the third worst team is right now, and it's going to be a shocker. I did not expect you to say something like Tampa Bay. I thought it would be something like, oh, Washington, Pittsburgh, something like that. A team that you think is going to be good that's not right now not being good. But Tampa Bay, like, I did not expect that at all.
Yeah, who would have expected, even after a short sample size of games, the Tampa Bay Lightning have a worse control of goals at even strength than the Arizona Coyotes?
Wow.
Like, come on.
It's incredible. It's great.
Yeah, it's insane. This is why the start of the season is the most fun, right? Anytime, it's just like the start of playoffs. Anytime everybody starts at zero, the stories get wild. Because in the middle of the season, you don't notice a 3 or 4 game blip where a team is just complete garbage and nothing goes right for them because they've got 50 other games that they've played that those numbers are tacked onto. So like you see the drop, but you don't see the like 15% for the Blackhawks, right? Like that's, you have, that has to be pointed out by somebody who's actually looking into the team. It's not readily apparent to everyone. So I find it always super funny to look at that kind of stuff. And I don't think the Lightning are going to miss the playoffs by any stretch of the imagination. They'll figure it out. Like you said, new pieces in new spots. They might have to change some of the ways that they play, but like Ross Colton is a guy that I'm super interested in seeing how he does this year. Super interested to see how Corey Perry fits, see if he'll lose in the final for a third straight year. Is there any bitterness on your part for Corey Perry with the Lightning?
Not really. I think, you know, the Lightning offered him what he wanted and the Canadians didn't. I totally understand it. I do think that, you know, for him, he said that he was a Canadiens fan all through his life, and this was something that he wanted to experience. And there are very few players that have that opportunity, right? Like the caliber of Corey Perry, where teams really want him, even though he's relatively getting on in years, and it would be totally legit for him to retire right now. I don't have the bitterness. Like the bitterness that I have is towards the Canadiens for the offseason that they've had, and it's for many, many reasons, right? Like the Mayu pick and all of that. And I think it's becoming more and increasingly clear that this is going to be Bergevin's last year. They're not going to be even talking about the contract until the end of the season. He talked about only honoring and then thinking about it after. You know, there's the writing seems to be on the wall on that front. But to his credit with Marc Bergevin, the one thing that he is he's not messing up the team before he leaves and just leaving a giant pile of mess. He's trying to get players like Nick Suzuki locked up. Like, he's still doing those things. I just think that this offseason was not that successful, right? Like, it's exactly like you said, you could see the Shea Weber earlier than projected retirement coming. You could see all of that kind of stuff happening. They didn't really do much to shore up their center depth, even by getting Dvorak. There was still question mark when Kotkaniemi was still here. So that's the kind of bitterness that I would have. But in terms of Corey Perry, like, I think the Canadians could have given them two, like, it wouldn't have hurt them that much to give him 2 years. I understand why they didn't. I understand with players like Corey Perry, you only want to give them 1 year at a time. I find that understandable. I just think that like the set of decisions they made together made this team worse than it was last year.
Right. And I think when you look at it in the context of like the loss of in the room leadership, I think losing Corey Perry is a little bit more felt. You know, maybe they didn't know that Carey Price would be out for a bit. Or we don't actually know how long he's going to be out, right, with the player assistance program situation. and Shea Weber, they knew that was going to happen, you know, in the playoffs, they knew that was going to happen, you know?
Yeah.
So like in that context, I think it's harder to look past letting Corey Perry go for over 1 year. You know, it's hard to
1 year at minimum.
Yeah.
Or exactly. Whatever it was 900,000 or whatever it was. It was 1 year for less than $1 million.
And I believe there was actually a report out this morning that there's a possibility that Bergevin is going to the Los Angeles Kings after this season to be with Luke Robitaille, which is interesting because he gets to reunite with Phil Deneau if that happens, because there were some hard feelings there and the way that those negotiations went. So that's always interesting because Bergevin has not been a very good GM in terms of maintaining relationships with players. Like, when players move on from the Canadiens, oftentimes there's a lot of bitterness between them and Mark Bergevin. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out if that report ends up being true. But we'll wrap up this segment. We're going to talk about the early positive surprises to the year right after we tell you about Rock Auto. That's right, our title sponsor is back again. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts that you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts from their computer, choosing only the brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. You can save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose 30, 50, or even 100% more at the same parts or for the same parts from a chain store or a car dealership that sells at a different price for you and for a professional mechanic? Rock Auto charges the same price for everyone. They're also a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. So they're not just some faceless corporation trying to take your money. They actually care about each and every customer. Go explore their easy-to-use website today and find a solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in your how did you hear about us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts that your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, Laura. So there's a couple teams that caught my eye early this year, blowing my expectations out of the water. And I think one of them I understand a little bit, and the other one is just completely confusing. So I'm going to start with the confusing one first, and that's the Buffalo Sabres. The Buffalo Sabres, not only did they rock the Canadiens in such a complete manner in their first game of the year, they are also leading the entire league in expected goals for percentage so far at even strength.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they have a 67% expected goals for percentage this season at even strength. And like, that's after two games. It's not a huge sample size. They've won both against the Canadiens and the Arizona Coyotes. So not the highest level of competition, but when you're outscoring your opponents by double, that's a good thing. And I like looking tactically at the Sabres against the Canadiens, I thought they played great. Like did everything necessary to bottle up the Canadiens. They knew that the Canadiens' defensive strategy was to be very aggressive in the neutral zone, trying to check people, pull stick checks and create turnovers. And it was just like one move to deke them out and another pass. And it was like 2-on-1 after 2-on-1 after 2-on-1 all game long. They studied the tape. They knew what was coming. Are the Buffalo Sabres going to be decent?
Well, I don't think so. I'm not quite ready to call it that.
Because I also refuse to believe it.
Well, like the day that they posted their lineup, their starting lineup for the first game, they're like, I think it was John Vogel of The Athletic. And then everybody was quote tweeting it and dunking on it. And I was like, this is a bad sign. And the more people made fun of it, the more I was like, the Canadiens are going to do what they do every year, except last year is the second game that they have. First, they go to Toronto, then they go to Buffalo. And every single time they lose that game or it's something ridiculous, it's like maybe an overtime win or shenanigans or something like that. So that part to me, I knew it was coming. But what I did not expect was how great the coaching was. And I think that is something that you really like. A lot of people will say things like intangibles, like, oh, they have a chip on their shoulder because they got made fun of. Oh, they have something to prove and all of that. I think that is definitely a small factor, but that's the kind of thing that can't override talent. What can override the lack of talent is good coaching. And that's what we saw in the Canadiens in the playoffs last year. I mean, I keep going back to the Canadiens, but it's because it's the thing that I'm the most familiar with. And so you can take good coaching or good coaching decisions or certain in moment decisions that are better than the other team, and you can totally dominate them for one game. Whether or not that's going to be applicable against teams that are much better or have much better coaching that you're going to encounter in an 82 game season, I think that that's possibly not realistic, but I think that it's not a surprise that they're able to play games really well. I think if you look at it on a game per game basis, it's not surprising that they're able to pull out wins like this. I mean, even Detroit was able to do that when they were historically bad a couple of years ago.
This is true. It's hard to get a read on what Buffalo is going to be this year because they have some decent players, right? And I think Kyle Okposo coming into this season healthy and playing like he did in that first game against the Canadiens is not what people expected, right? Like, I think most people, including myself, I thought Kyle Okposo was done. The injuries how long he's been dealing with these injuries, maybe he won't be able to keep up this level of consistency, but like, I loved how great he was because it's such a good story. And if he's able to be that like top line power forward, it does change things up and down that lineup. Tage Thompson looked great in that game. He's a guy that they've been waiting to break out for ever since they traded Ryan O'Reilly. You know, like at a certain point though, there's going to be spots in this lineup where it's never going to be good enough based on the roster they have. They'd have to make so many moves to be in the playoff picture. Like Cody Eakin, I think, is their like second line center. That doesn't work. It just doesn't work, you know? And like Rasmus Dahlin, I thought was great in that first game, but outside of him, there's a lot of like
question marks,
decent guys. Yeah. But nobody in the top, but at the same time, I'm looking at their defense now and I'm like, is this better than the Canadiens defense outside of Jeff Petrie? Like, that's how bad the Canadiens defense looks right now, especially with Edmonton out. All right. So the other team that I thought was really surprising in a positive way was the Columbus Blue Jackets. Now, the Blue Jackets, I don't think they don't have the underlying numbers so far that the Sabres do. But they came out in their first game honoring, oh my God, I'm going to butcher the name, the Laura, do you want to try the name of the goaltender who died in the fireworks accident?
I am also going to.
I'm honestly afraid.
I just remember he's number 18, and Merzlikins like dedicated his entire, I guess, season, everything to him.
Yeah, okay, so I'm going to go for it. It's Mattis Kivlenix.
Yes.
That's going to be the best that I'm going to do. Not going to be able to top that. They honored him before the game, and they came out and absolutely destroyed their opponent, and riding that emotion, I thought that was possibly the coolest game of the year so far. Like,
it was like 8-2, right?
Yeah,
like the final score.
Yeah, so that was fun. And I thought the next game that they would just be completely emotionally drained, you know, because
after that,
yeah, because that's a very natural thing when you just like pour everything into a game. The next one, just like, you can't meet those highs again. And it seemed like that for the first stretch, but then they came back and ended up beating Seattle, I believe, in the shootout. So like, they're 2-0, the Columbus Blue Jackets, mm-hmm. along with the Buffalo Sabres. These are the two teams that probably almost everyone expected to be the two worst teams in the Eastern Conference.
Oh yeah. And usually at this time we're already talking about whether it's a lost season or not. And we're not at this point, but it's something that's really interesting because I feel like, you know, we talk so much about analytics and things like that and X's and O's and all of that, but there's something to be said about when you're talking about the emotion. I think another way to look at it is they're not overthinking. Players and coaches are not overthinking. They're going out there and they're playing freely, right? Like when you put all that emotion into playing, that freedom that you have, often it negates the little things that you do that cause mistakes, right?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it is a higher risk kind of way to play, but also those are the opportunities for your talented players to show what they've got, or players that normally wouldn't be in a position to score to have that opportunity. That I think there's something to be said for playing with freedom. I think over time it works out so that they make enough mistakes that usually coaches don't want that. But in a short sample size, often like that can come out and really be the difference. If you're a mediocre team, it can make you look good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the Blue Jackets are a team that has a few of those types of players that, like, when they get that freedom, they have the opportunity to create a lot of offense. So far, for example, Max Domi has been incredible. He's a guy who's a gigantic defensive liability, but when he's given the freedom to create, is actually one of the, like a really excellent even strength offensive guy.
Patrick he's a great Laine. Playmaker.
Yeah, Patrick Laine, same thing. He's been great so far. I was actually wrong. They scored in the overtime to win their second game against the Seattle Kraken. Patrick Laine scored it. So like, those are kind of guys that you want to give that freedom to and probably wouldn't have had it under John Tortorella, right?
Right.
So it's interesting to see maybe that coaching change to more of a player's coach is going to allow the Blue Jackets a little bit more freedom to have some fun over the course of this year. And they won't be as dreary as we all expected. But I think that's probably all we need to talk about for hockey now. So we're going to take a quick break and hear about Built Bar. And then we're going to talk about some pop culture stuff. Did you know that Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar on the market today? It has so many delicious flavors that there's something for everyone. And if you don't know what kind of Built Bar you'd like, or if you're an adventurous person, you can get a mixed box where you'll get two of each of the nine major like consistent flavors. Coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, and German chocolate. I've got a Built Bar box upstairs right now in my pantry of, I believe it's cookie dough, and it's pretty good. It's very chewy, very easy to eat, and to gives you some energy. Not only are Built Bars, not only do Built Bars have the best flavors, they're also the healthy, all right? So each Built Bar has between 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar, and only 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 to get your 15% off of your first order. Use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. I'm just noticing, Laura, you know, when you listen to yourself and you hear like your own accent a little bit, when I said carbs,
so very Canadian,
so Western Canadian specifically. Car, get in the car.
The just carbs.
Like, yeah, just like annoy myself.
Now I'm going to do that on my reads.
Imitate me. Yeah, that's going to be great. All right. So have you got anything that you watched this weekend that was particularly fun or interesting or anything that you're into?
I'm going to say right now, I have taken the opportunity of the last couple of weeks. I'm going to have a busy couple of weeks coming up. And I've been rewatching Parks and Recreation. And I last night I caught up on Kim's Convenience. Their last season is out on Netflix in Canada. And the big thing was I literally stayed up almost all night for this. I watched the third season of You that is out on Netflix. So there's been a lot of TV in my life the last few days. There won't be for the next 2 weeks, but I managed to catch up on all of those. And if you're a fan of the series You, the third season has the same intensity and creepiness of the first two seasons, but it's actually also quite an interesting study in a lot of things. It's an interesting study in suburban life, in influencers or momfluencers and mommy bloggers and things like that. And also just the idea of being young parents, which is not something that you expect on a show that's based on a creepy stalker dude. That's, you know, that's legitimately a scary person, but I found that it's kind of darkly humorous how they juxtapose the struggles of being young parents and trying to, you know, make it in your career and things like that. And also being extremely bad people. And so I do like, if you are a fan of the first couple of seasons, then you will like the third season. It's got the same kind of, it's got the same level of dark humor, and it's got like a little bit more intensity, a little bit more, more suspense. As far as Kim's Convenience goes, you either like it or you don't, but it is a very heartwarming show. It's one of those shows that, it ended prematurely. They ended it after 5 seasons, and all of the cast members felt that the storylines could have kept going for at least another season. That was kind of sad, but it's one of those shows that people put on to feel better at the end of a bad day. And that's, I recommend it for that. But I also understand that a lot of people find it hard to get into at the beginning. Personally, for me, I thought like it's cute and heartwarming. And if you're looking for that. As for Parks and Rec, it holds up to your first viewing. There are some things that are problematic about it that on second viewing are a lot more glaring that in the moment I wouldn't have noticed, but it's still a good enough show that it will, you know, it's a good thing to have on in the background when you're doing your dishes or working on something manual and or folding laundry and things like that. Like that's where I'm at, but I haven't done anything like anything like Mary always has cool game things or sci-fi things, and so I don't have any of that.
Yeah, I know. I can't keep up with Mary's stuff either, because she's like all into like new games, and I'm like, I'm playing the same game I've been playing for the last 3 years because I don't have time to game. So like I still play Spider-Man PS4. I haven't even got the Miles Morales one yet.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with that. I'm not judging myself. I just, it's different kind of life when you have two kids. But yeah, I love Kim's Convenience. I got into it right away. It's really cute. And I feel like there's something that, I know it's about like a Korean family, but there's something universal about like the immigrant experience and like the immigrant parents with the accents, the kids who are more like evolved Western. Into the yeah. Western culture, and like the conflict between that, that is so interesting as a white guy who grew up with a lot of immigrant friends, or like friends whose parents were immigrants, to see that dynamic on TV, because it's not on TV a lot. And right. It's like that it's dealt with humor and heart. I really love that show. For myself, I've not been able to watch a lot. My wife is currently watching Sons of Anarchy for the first time.
Oh, that's because, intense.
Like, yeah, so many of her friends suggested Sons of Anarchy because they think that the main character, Jax Teller, is so hot.
He is.
Okay, she's not down with it. She's not down with it. So far, she's in the sixth season now, and she's like, when does it get good?
She went all the way. She got right into it. No, I honestly, I'm definitely guilty of watching shows just because a character in it is hot. And he is. I find him hot. Like, is Charlie Hunnam? I don't know how to... Hunnam, right. So I find him attractive, but it took me a while to see it. But Sons of Anarchy is pretty intense. It's an intense show.
It's a very intense show. And I think that at the time that it came out, I feel like it doesn't hold up very much anymore, because you watch it now and you're like, why are you rooting for these people? They're all awful. They're just like, there's much more of like an anti-hero vibe 10, 12 years ago than there is now. And now it's like, oh, this motorcycle gang, so cool. It's like, they're not cool. These guys are all like maladjusted losers.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, it's our culture as well. Like the context is that you see those guys in real life now. And it's like, these are bad people. It's not just a character. People that are like that, they don't usually have redeeming qualities when you're face to face with them.
Yeah, 100%. And so like, it's interesting to see now in like at the almost the end of the show, where things are starting to become like a little bit less intense on like a gang level, and it's become more interpersonal. Now Kish is enjoying it a bit more because she's seeing like characters in the show actually trying to move away from like the violence and how difficult it is to create that separation. And I find that's probably the most interesting aspect of the entire show. Whereas like when I watched it back in like the late aughts when it first came out, I was just like, yeah, it's cool. There's like people fighting all the time, motorcycles, guns, you know. It's like you view it very differently as you get older. But yeah, it's funny watching her see it. But also, when it's ever pointed out to you that Charlie Hunnam cannot maintain an American accent,
yes,
all you can hear,
it's so bad.
It's really bad.
They keep casting him and stuff and expecting him to have an American accent, and it's like, no, this does not work. Give him any other kind of accent. Oh, I did forget to mention that I finally managed to watch Black Widow, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm glad. It's yes. Awesome. I can't wait for Shang-Chi to come out on Disney Plus now. I want to watch that again.
I've heard it's really good. I didn't get a chance to watch it in theaters, and I'll wait for it to come out on Disney Plus.
I think you'll definitely enjoy it. It was definitely like, I was looking forward to it, but I wasn't sure what to expect because it's a character that I don't know a ton about. But obviously the connection to Simu Liu from Kim's Convenience, you want him to succeed, our good Canadian boy. But yeah, it was excellent. I really enjoyed it. But we'll wrap it up there. Laura's going to be back with us on Thursday as well, while Mary's still out of town going to Disneyland or Disney World. I don't remember which one she's at. She's at Disney. But that's all we have for you today on the Crosscheck NHL show. Thanks for making us your first listen every day. But before we let you go, we got to tell you about your second listen. Please go check out Locked On Fantasy Hockey. Host Scott Collin leans on his decades of fantasy hockey insight and experience every day to help you be the expert of your fantasy hockey league. It's free and available on all platforms. Oh, shit.